thanks for joining us. And I do want to say it's great to see the strong interest that we've had in today's session. It's clearly an important topic, something that's top of mind for a lot of people. And today we have some leading experts who are going to share their knowledge with us. So before we get started, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about SIP and why events like today are so important. Of course, as many of you know, Swine Innovation Pork facilitates and coordinates research and knowledge transfer for Canada's pork sector. So that includes the management of Swine Cluster 4, which is a collaborative research program that's focused all around sustainability and resiliency and the growth of Canada's pork industry. So with support from Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, the Swine Cluster is investing over $20 million across 15 large-scale projects. And that includes researchers from institutions and partners all across Canada. So today's webinar is going to dive into research from one of our Swine Cluster projects, where the team completed a pan-Canadian study looking at post-weaning diarrhea in Canadian swine farms. We're also going to be zooming out and taking a look beyond that. And we've invited Dr. Gustavo Silva, who's going to help us take a broader look at how disease risk and prevention and biosecurity and stewardship work from a bigger picture systems level perspective as well. So before we dive in, I'd like to just go over a few quick housekeeping items. French interpretation is available using the globe icon at the bottom of your screen. So in French, l'interprétation en français est disponible en appuyant sur l'icône de globe au bas de votre écran. We do encourage everyone to submit questions throughout the webinar using the Q&A function. There is a Q&A button on your screen. So please send in your questions as they come to mind. And we've set aside some time at the end of both presentations. We'll save around 15 minutes for a Q&A session, and we're going to do our best to get through as many questions as possible. So make sure to send those in. Now, let's kick things off. Our first presenter today is Dr. Vahab Farzan. And Dr. Farzan comes from the University of Guelph, where he's an adjunct faculty member at the Ontario Veterinary College. And his research focuses on the epidemiology of foodborne pathogens and the prevention of infectious diseases in swine populations. So his work looks at the relationship between microbial agents and environmental factors and immune responses in pigs. And he has an emphasis on enteric diseases, gut microbiome health, genetic resistance, and most important and most relevant to the industry is his interest in the development of tools like vaccines and probiotics. So today, Dr. Farzan is going to share findings from his latest swine cluster research. And on that note, Dr. Farzan, let's turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you very much, Daniel, for the introduction. And good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Let me share my screen first. I think that's the first thing. Make sure. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yeah, perfect.
Perfect. Yes, so as yeah, it's a great pleasure today that I've been given this opportunity to share the result of this project looking at the post-weaning diarrhea associated with E. coli on Canadian swine farms. So the post-weaning diarrhea is, if I go to the next slide, which sorry about that. For some reason, I cannot go to the next slide.
Well, that's okay. Vahab, if you can just exit out of that full screen and then just maybe try sharing it It looks like you're sharing your full screen and just not the presentation itself. So if you click share there and then just
There we
click on the
go.
PowerPoint presentation, you should be able to go to each one there. There we go.
Okay, yeah, well, thank you.
Perfect.
So it's the post mining area is important disease in swine industry globally, and there is a reason for that. The first thing is economically is very important. It's million dollar spending to control and prevent this disease. The estimation in Canada is about $100 million annually. I don't have time or this beyond of this presentation to see how this actually number actually estimated, but this is how it is. And most of it is just for the production losses, right? And then the treatment, vaccination, so all of it actually costs money for the producer. So that's important economically. Number two is the significant reason for antimicrobial usage in post-weaning pigs and nursery during the first few weeks and maybe 5 6 weeks over in the pigs they are in the nursery. And this antimicrobial resistance has consequences, has the adverse effect, which number one is cause the treatment failure. So the genes responsible for antimicrobial resistance can move from one bacteria to other bacteria. So if there is a disease in another production disease in pigs, it's hard for the veterinarian to select the antibiotic that works against the specific microbe and bacteria because there are antimicrobial resistance. Also, it has public health concern. So no one wants to get the genes that they are actually carrying antimicrobial resistance to the table and to get the to the feet and kitchen. So that's all consequences of the antimicrobial usage. Now, but one thing before we go further, it's important to notice that the post-weaning diarrhea, like many other diseases in swine and livestock, is not just one thing. Is a phenomenon that actually involves different parameters. If you want to categorize it in a three main category, is there should be a collaboration and teamwork between pig, microbe, and environment to develop the post-weaning diarrhea in pigs. So looking at the microbe, there is a list of the microbe that can cause post-weaning diarrhea. It can be virus like rotavirus, coronavirus. It can be bacteria like Clostridia, Salmonella, and E. coli. Even when we're talking about the E. coli, not every E. coli can cause post-weaning diarrhea. Not every E. coli is a bad bacteria. In fact, there are commensal E. coli that they are good. Pigs, they need to have them in their gut. But some of them, we call them enterotoxigenic E. coli. I'm going to touch on that in the next slide. It's a problem, right? So when it gets to the environment, of course, the management, the diet, they are issue for it should be actually some parameters in the environment that actually help the disease develop. Now, speaking about the pig, the immune status of the pig, which is maternal immunity vaccination, is important. The gut microbiome or bacterial population in the gut is important. So if it's good bacteria, then it's going to help the pigs. But one of the parameters which is related to the pigs, specifically for the E. coli infection, is that the fact is that some pigs, they are genetically resistant to enterotoxigenic E. coli. So we are going to touch on that again. So now, okay, I have again the same issue. Sorry about that. Okay. Now, like I said, enterotoxigenic E. coli is it's It's on the E. coli that has sort of hair-like appendages. They call it Fimbriae, and which is different type of Fimbriae. They call it F4, which is K88, and then F18, F5, which is old name is K99, and F6, F41. And then the bacteria can actually attach to the cell in the gut by this Fimbriae. And then when attach to the cell, when actually anchor or take the position, they can shoot, they can produce the toxin. So they should be able to produce the toxin. So that's a definition of the antitoxicity E. coli. Now, there's one thing. Pig needs to have the receptor for that Fimbriae, right? So bacteria needs to have the Fimbriae, and then pig needs to have the receptor. That's what I'm saying, that the pigs genetically, that the pigs that they are genetically resistant to E. coli, they don't have the receptor. So when they don't have the receptor, as you see on this another picture, so the bacteria cannot actually attach to the cell, then the pig is going to be safe. So there are the method to determine the genetic susceptibility to pigs, that we do it in our lab. So there are two genetic markers that we use for F4, and there is one genetic marker we use for F18. So we determine the genetic susceptibility to E. coli, F4, and F18. Now, with that introduction, like Daniel mentioned, we started this project in 2023 with mainly funded by Swine Innovation Pork, and the aim of this project is addressing three main questions. The first question is that, what are the types of E. coli or enterotoxigenic E. coli that cause postwinning on Canadian farms? Why do we need to answer this question? Because answering this question, having the knowledge, would help to develop more efficient vaccine. The question number two is, how frequent is the genetic susceptibility of pigs to ETEC F4 and F18 on Canadian farms? Again, answering this question or having answer to this question will help to improve the genetics program in order to have more resistance pigs against E. coli. And the question number three is, what is the role of the gut microbiome or bacterial population in the gut in developing postwinning diarrhea? This question and having knowledge about the microbiome will help to develop probiotics. And then we can find the good bacteria. They can put it in the sort of the diet as a probiotic, and then we'll promote the health in the gut of the pigs, and they will be more resistant to E. coli infection. So all of this question, as you see, they come in one thing. They don't rely on antimicrobial usage. So any success in any of these methods is going to minimize the use of antimicrobials in swine, which is very important. Now, how we did this project, again, like I mentioned, I started project 3 years ago, still is an ongoing project. But the way we did this project with the help of the swine veterinarian in Canada, different provinces, the farms that they had ongoing outbreak of postwinning diarrhea. I'm highlighting this one because I'm going to make a point on that. So the farms selected, if they had ongoing postwinning diarrhea on each farm, 10 pigs with postwinning diarrhea selected, and 5 pigs as the control that they didn't have postwinning diarrhea, the same age, pen mate. So poop samples collected to test for E. coli shedding or enterotoxigenic E. coli shedding, also to test to examine the fecal microbiome, which is sort of representing the gut microbiome, right? Also, blood samples collected from the pigs to test for genetic susceptibility. Most of the pigs, maybe two-thirds of the pigs, as you see in the bar graph, they were actually off-site nursery. About 20-25% they were fallow to finisher farms. Okay. Now, this is how we did it. And now let's go to the first thing I want to show you here. This one actually is not part of the three question that I mentioned. So when we are doing a project, this is not the first time. We find something when we start the project, which is very interesting. So I put it at the beginning. So as you see, about 85% of the farms, they had high level of zinc oxide in their diet. 85% of them. And like I said, the farms, they had the outbreak of post-weaning diarrhea. So now the question is that they use zinc oxide, still they had post-weaning diarrhea. Also, 50%, 51% of the farms, they had sows and or piglets vaccinated against E. coli, enterotoxin E. coli. So what does it mean? Well, we'll touch on that. But the question is that either vaccine didn't work out. I'm going to touch on that. Why? It's a possibility. And or there were other pathogens, other microbes causing post-weaning diarrhea, right? Now that's very interesting, I think, to show. And like I said, I'm going to talk about this. Now, I mentioned enterotoxigenic E. coli, the definition, Fimbria and toxid. But the point is that there is not only one type of enterotoxigenic E. coli. As you see here, at least on the farms, on Canadian farms, here on this slide, I'm projecting five different type of enterotoxigenic E. coli, right? So as you see, we have one which is not actually on the enterotoxigenic E. coli, but is here. This one is the E. coli that has only one Fimbria or toxin, the virulence factor. So we don't actually categorize it as the enterotoxigenic E. coli, but those one they categorize as enterotoxigenic E. coli. That means they have Fimbria and they have toxin. They fully equipped to attach and release the toxin. They're not just one type, they're five times. Why it's important? Why it's important? Vaccine. So it's important to know which one is present, which one has caused the post-weaning diarrhea. So that's one thing. The other thing, when looking at different provinces in Canada, so we don't see the same type of enterotoxigenic E. coli. They are different. So the main antigen we put in the vaccine, it's in the commercial vaccine, it's Fimbria or toxin or both of them. Some vaccine they have multiple Fimbria, right? So some vaccine they have only two Fimbria. So as you see, for example, on this specific slide, F18 is very frequent, or at least higher than other provinces in Quebec, sorry. So, but if you look at F5, which is Fimbria F5, is very frequent in Manitoba, right? Now the question is that if I'm in Manitoba, so should I vaccinate the pigs? At least my priority should be F5. So even there is a vaccine has F4, F18, F5, why I should bother? Because when you put different Fimbria in vaccine, you are going to compromise the immune response because the pig needs to respond to five antigen. So why I should bother and vaccinate a pig against all five Fimbria? Why I know they don't have it, right? So that's one thing it's important to know, right? It has a very good application. And this one is very interesting. So look, we got out of the pigs that they had post-weaning diarrhea, only 10% of them, they had ETEC shedding. So we isolated ETAC only from 10% of the pigs. So now the question, what was the cause of post-weaning diarrhea in other pigs? So perhaps other pathogens, like I said, viruses, bacteria, or it can be the management, it can be the diet. So it's not even infectious disease. So to get to the bottom of this one, we are doing some microbiome work analysis. I'm not going to present it today because it's in progress. So we get to the point that because we're doing the shotgun sequencing, and then we will know if there are other pathogens involved in this post-weaning diarrhea. So we do the, again, microbiome, which is cover bacteria, but someone perhaps not in this project need to look at viruses as well. So that's a message on this one. Now, this is in bacterial side. Now let's go in the pig side, the genetic resistance, right? So we tested for two different ETEC, ETEC-F4 and ETEC-F18. So resistance to ETEC-F4 or E. coli F4 is relatively high. It's good. 15, 60% overall on different provinces, they are resistant to F4. Now, if my pig, they are resistant to F4, should I still vaccinate them? Maybe not. So that's one thing. But if you look at ETEC-F18 on the other side of the screen, more than 90% of the pigs, they were susceptible to F80. So this is a red card. So we need to do something about it, right? Because that's the way we should concentrate and should do some works in two different ways. One way, if I have F4 and F18 in one vaccine, should I give them the same weight? Because they are resistant to F4, but they are susceptible to F18. Like I said, why I should pick in that position that to induce immune response against F4 and F18, while I know 90% of the pigs, they are susceptible to F18, but only 40, 30% of they are susceptible to F4. So these are the things that we have to figure it out. And then we have go further to get this one actually a solution which has real application in the real life on farm for it. I think we are walking in the very right direction in this aspect. Now, this is a genetic part. Now, if I want to wrap up and then say, okay, these are the questions we already asked. So now, did this project is answering the question and how actually it helps and what does it mean for the swine producer, right? Already, I actually touched on some of the point, but I want to again sort of recap and highlight the founding of this project because it's important. Even it's 5 years project, at the end of the day, this is important that we put in just one or two slides. Here I have two slides, actually 1.5 slides, and it's 5 points. So I'm going to finish my presentation with this two slide or 1.5 slide. So number one, like I said, it's not only E. coli cause post-weaning diarrhea on Canadian farm. Okay, so what we should do, we should test for other microbes. That's many veterinarians actually, they do this one, right? But this is not the actually, this is observational, this is epidemiological study. We want to actually get to a structure and the situation, a peak population. Many veterinarians, when they see the post-weaning diarrhea, I know they will send the samples to lab. Well, sometimes they will ask for a very comprehensive diagnosis work. But when we're doing at the, at the population level to investigate, that's important to look at other pathogens. Like I said, microbiome analysis will help us to address this one relatively to some extent, okay? Because we are not going to cover the viruses in our microbiome analysis. Number two, like I mentioned, there are different types of the E. coli on Canadian farms. So it is very important to make sure the vaccine that we use in different provinces, even on different farms, it's exactly targeting what exists on that specific farm or in that specific operation, many farms or provinces. That's important. Like I mentioned, if we don't have F4, why we should put it in the vaccine, right? So that's because it's going to just compromise the immune response in the pigs. They have to consume energy to mount immune response to different pathogens. Why one of them maybe it's not necessary. So the other thing that I mentioned in my slide, the farm they had post-winning diarrhea, but they used zinc oxide, right? So and then also they vaccinated for E. coli. Again, we get to the same point. Either it caused by other microbes or the vaccine wasn't actually effective. So there are two reasons for that. On the genetic side, I think, like again, I mentioned this one. So it's a good resistance against E. coli F4, which is very promising and it's good. So, but again, I think the outcome from this one is that we should go back and see if the pigs they are resistant, why we should vaccinate them. One thing I want to mention here, because there are a significant differences even between the farms. We have a farms that 100% of the pigs they are resistant to F4, and we have a farms that 60%. So if a farm has 90%, 100% resistance to F4, right? So why we should vaccinate them, or why we should zinc oxide in their diet, which is has environmental health and concern and public health concern, as I mentioned. And finally, number five is the high genetic susceptibility to E. coli F18, right? That's very important. I think this is something that perhaps the swine, breeding genetics company, and then this is just not the geneticists. I think microbiologists, epidemiologists work together, and then to see if breeding the pigs that they are genetically resistant F18, that would be, I think, the direction that I think perhaps we should go. Now, like I said, putting all of this together, these are the solution to control post-winning diarrhea with the method either genetics or more effective vaccine or probiotics that actually minimize the antimicrobial usage on swine farms. This is, I think, very important to highlight from this project. Like I said, this is an ongoing project, and then hopefully, yeah, we will be able to share more result as actually it comes out. I think let me at the end to just express my acknowledgement and thanks to, first of all, to Swine Innovation Pork, because the project like that, I think at the end of the day, it has application for swine producer, which is great. And when we get a project approved by Swine Innovation Pork like that, the good thing is that other stakeholders, they trust the judgment of the Swine Innovation Pork, because they recognize the Swine Innovation Pork that they know the industry, they know what are the gaps, they know what are the problems. If Swine Innovation Pork funded this project, why we shouldn't do? So they are going to get, and that's what exactly happened to this project. So we could get a very good actually support from Cargill on this project, and also University of Guelph and Ontario Veterinary College. So put all of this together, it was really great. Also, I specifically want to thank you, the swine veterinarian from Demeter in Quebec, in Ontario, Precision and Premier in Manitoba and Alberta. They helped, they found the farms, they visited the farms and helped us and collected the samples. That was great. And also the government of provincial government in Ontario, OMAFRO, has been very supportive for this project. And finally, the most important one, swine producer. Without their participation, as you know, it was impossible to do this project. So I'm going to stop here. Thank you very much for your attention. You can find me. I mean, I hopefully you can get some questions, some feedback from you here, but always you can get me. There's only one Wahhabit University of Golf. Just type my name, you get it. You can email me and we can talk about this project. Thank you very much again for listening to this presentation.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Farzan. So I think, of course, that was a really informative presentation. And I think we can see the importance of the research that's been going on and that, of course, is continuing over the next 2 years through the cluster. But what's most important is the doors that this type of research is opening in terms of more targeted treatment approaches for the future. And so certainly the work that you've done and your interest in connecting with the industry, Dr. Farzan, is very much appreciated. So again, we're going to save questions until the end. And now we're going to switch things up a little bit. We're going to zoom out. We're going to zoom out from the cluster and we're going to take more of a big picture perspective. We have our second presenter, who's going to broaden that discussion and who's going to look at disease risk and prevention from a systems level view. So I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Gustavo Silva from Iowa State University. And Dr. Silva is a veterinary epidemiologist, and his research focuses on applied disease epidemiology, swine health, biosecurity, disease surveillance systems, and risk assessment. So his work has contributed significantly to the sector's understanding of how diseases emerge and spread and persist in swine production systems. And he's done extensive research around diseases like PRRS, around biosecurity practices, and herd-level disease prevention. So today, Dr. Silva is going to discuss how surveillance and risk assessment and biosecurity can help reduce disease pressure and support improved herd health and antimicrobial stewardship. So, Dr. Silva, thank you for joining us. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Can you guys see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So thanks, Daniel, for the introduction, and thank you for the Swine Innovation Park for the opportunity. So today I'll be presenting a high-level approach and then more system-level approach that we did to measure antibiotic use in a project. So these will be my topics that I will cover briefly today, and then going down the path on assessing the opportunity cost of swine diseases, talking a little bit about disease control and biosecurity from a system perspective, and then going deep into more related to the porcine respiratory disease complex, and then presenting you guys a study that we did where we measure the antibiotic use following a PRRS outbreak. And then I will go over a little bit more details how we did it and why is that important. Okay. So we start with the basics here that basically we go back down to the roots of the clinical manifestation of diseases in any given population with the study of the Epi triad. So pretty much we will have the pig or a group of pigs. We'll have the pathogens that can be present or not. And then we have the environment. And then if something happens, or we have a break in the chain here between any of these elements, we'll have any given disease manifestations. And that can be driven by the group immunity or susceptibility of the pigs from a pathogen perspective, can be basically on the different pathogens or co-infections or infectivity, contagiousness, pathogenesis, and virulence of the given strains. And then that can be a multiply factor by the stocking density, cleaning, and disinfection process, and in overall biosecurity. Okay, so any disbalance that we have between the three factors is where usually we see disease manifestation. And then the big thing about the diseases is more what I would call the opportunity cost of swine diseases is not only the cost that we have up front, but also the differences on the opportunity of the cost or of the money that we did not make if the disease was not present. And I like this table just to highlight the importance of disease control and elimination, because disease is not just like mathematics, 1 + 1 = 2. More likely that any time that you have different diseases happening at the same time, your cost is not going to be 2, but will be 3, 4, 5. And I give an example would be PERS. So on average, we have here between the past 3 studies that we did here at Iowa State, we can reach about $6 or $7. But then when we PERS interact with other diseases such as Michael or influenza, you can see that the cost, if not double, sometimes goes 2.5 or 3 times higher than the original cost. Then the idea of these is basically what I would call the iceberg of costs, right? Because disease, the real cost of disease is not only what we would call the direct cost, like Dr. Farzan was saying, the vaccines, the medication, the veterinary, the diagnostics, the treatment, right? Increasing culling of pigs. And then this is just simulations that we did. And overall, the average cost would be between $1 and $2.5 per pig. But then we have the cost that we don't see, right? Or sometimes it's hard to measure. That will be the reduction in growth rate, the worsening feed efficiency, high mortality, high increased variability. So when we market those pigs, right, we have more penalizations given the spread, right? Or at the end of the day, they are lighter pig. They have a higher proportion of lighter pigs, and then you will get some penalization for that on the packing plan, but also more health status interventions on top of the ones we already have, given the co-infections, right? And then not only that, we may, if we have an outbreak in a given herd, this outbreak may, this pathogen may spread to other places, and then increasing the risk of the outbreaks to other places and other herds. So disease is just not add on cost, but also takes away what you could have earned. And this is just some simulations that we did based on the decreases or in the worsening on the feed efficiency, average daily gain, increases on day to market, all the kind of stuff that we just put a cost, right, on a potential cost of a disease outbreak or a potential subclinical disease, right? And this is basically the message that I want to spread out. It's not only what we can see, but out what we don't see, and sometimes we don't really take a look at that, and we don't measure because we are always looking at the averages. So, in terms of disease control, we do really need to go back to epidemiologic understanding, right? Like I mentioned in the third slide, diseases is all about the interaction and then something's happening between the agent, the host that will be the pig, and what we are doing in the environment. So if something happens between those three, usually we, and then, for example, we have a poor efficiency on cleaning and disinfecting the installations. We have multiple pig sources in the same flow. And on top of that, we have farms that don't have good environment. So these will weaken up a little bit on the host perspective, and then they will create susceptibility, even a problem in the environment for the agents that they can come and do the job and occur the diseases. So what we really need to do this is basically the process of breaking the infection, the chain of infection, right? And then we have the tools, and then we have how we measure, right? So the first one is the 3 ways that we can can do to decrease the chain of infection, to break the chain of infection, and to prevent that chain of infection. The first one is, of course, the biosecurity, right? Doing appropriate quarantine, hygiene, and sanitation, limit the access of the pigs. The other one will be more related to the host, not to the environment. It will be related to the host. So, vaccination, have a very good prior immunization, acclimation for the pathogens we have at the farm, understanding what pathogens are circulating, and then if we do have a vaccine or if we do have disease or if we need to make any type of intervention. And then we have the medications or therapies that basically most of the times they will just be for decrease or ameliorate clinical consequences, right? So most of the time the therapies is just a short-term remedy because usually right after an outbreak we'll have increasing use of antibiotics, we'll have co-infections, and then just treating once may not be enough. We will need to keep treating those animals. And how we measure those? Basically monitoring and surveillance of populations, right, to understand what are the pathogens that we are dealing with? And then, once we understand the pathogens we are dealing with in specific flows, we can understand if we need extra biosecurity, if we need extra immunizations, right? The diagnosis, they detect and confirm the cases. And at the end of the day, what matters the most? Productivity, right? It's always, I like to say, so we do sell pigs, we do sell amount of pounds or amount of kilos that we sell to the packing plant. We don't sell diagnostics, we don't sell PCR, we don't sell ELISA. So basically, the correct measure to assess all the interventions and to make sure we are on the right path should be productivity. And why biosecurity is important? Because biosecurity will help you to decrease the risk. As I always say, there's no zero risk, but if we apply biosecurity, we can decrease the risks. And then decreasing the risk, we can continue understanding our failures and have a strong biosecurity because this can prevent the disease to get into the farm, the disease to get out of the farm and spread to other farms. And then by understanding these, we can decrease the occurrence of the diseases, right? And then basically, we need to look at everything that comes into the farm and goes out of the farm as well, and understanding the practice that we need to do to avoid increasing our risks. Okay, so the cores will be control of entry, visitors, cleanse, infection, quarantine, basic lines of separation. And then if that doesn't happen, basically, we will face the hidden cost. Right, so not only the mortality and morbidity, what we can see, but also worse productivity, use of antibiotics, worse of feed efficiencies, and then we will talk about a little bit about how much we can expect to have an increase when we had an outbreak, and then that goes back to the most important complex that we have into the porcine, right? So the porcine respiratory disease complex is the ones that it's the main driver of the respiratory diseases. And if I can name one disease that worse everything, would be PRRS. So pretty much for the ones that are not very familiar, the porcine respiratory disease complex is the interaction of multiple agents, right? So when we think about multiple agents, they can be viral, they can be bacterial. And then all the factors that we discussed related to the environment can predispose the occurrence of those. And then the side effects of them will basically impact on productivity. Okay, and then at the end of the day, we'll have a economic impact, and then goes back to how we can do to basically overcome this. This will be immunization, medication, and then biosecurity. And then why PERS? Because PERS is very costly. We did a study 2 years ago here that estimate cost for the US was around 1.2 billion, right? And then the problem with PERS is always involves, right? Mutate very fast. Vaccine have limited protection, heterologous protection across different strains. And then we have an inconsistent protection. So this is why the focus should be stabilize PERS first, because the secondary disease is most likely to fade out. Why? Because PERS just open doors to other diseases, okay? And then because PERS targets the macrophages, right? And then will cause immunosuppression, and then we'll leave the animal a little bit open, the doors to all their bacteria, virus, and the other diseases. And then different pathogens are associated with PERS infection. And then I will show this in a little bit. When we look at our data here at the VDL, this is the major confirmed disease diagnosis in the past 60 days. So for all production phases. And then you can see here that PERS is the first one, followed by strep, influenza, Glossarella, and others. And when we look more closely on the interactions between them, if you, this is a little bit of messy plot, but I like this pretty well to make the point that look at PERS here and look that PERS pretty much interacts with almost all the pathogens here. So when you have PERS, you may not have only one, only PERS, but also have many other virus and bacteria having co-infections. And then that gets to almost off the end of the presentation here with few slides on showing how we measure that. So pretty much we did a trial that we follow. We assess the changes of antibiotic use in growth finish pigs after the introduction of PERS in a naive ferret-to-finish system. And then how we did, we collaborate with Rumfeld Farms in Nebraska, was a multiplier, and then was a DNA supplier, but also was PERS, Mycoplasma, and PED negative farm. Okay, so that farm was pretty much naive for the top three major diseases that we have in swine production. And then they have an outbreak of PERS 2, 144 lineage 1C. And then they use MLV and LVI to control for the outbreak. And then what we had all the feed medication and growth finish and water treatments per lot. There we use it to compute what was their expenditures on antibiotic use. So this is the timeline of events during the naive status. We have a nursery and finish, and then we have a transition gap that basically they did a partial depop and repop on the nursery. So they empty all the nurseries and then started refilling. And then by that time, we would call that epidemic status, where we have higher circulation of the virus, high amount of virus. And then we have nurseries, we have finishing sites. And then they transition to a more low endemic status, or what we would call low prevalence. So at total, we have 166 lots, and then for the nursery, and 39 lots for the finish to compare those three different status. And then we compute what is used out there. So basically, the pig treatments stay at risk. So pretty much is a metric of how many animals was treated in each lot per day that they were at the barn. And then we have that on the water. We have injectables. We have the classes, and then also we have the overall. And getting right to the point here, when we look just for the nursery phase, on the overall, we have an increase of up to 3.79 times comparing to when they were naive. This is antibiotic use overall. And then when we look for the injectables as well, they have up to 2.2 times more use of antibiotics injectables during that time comparing. So comparing pretty much naive to any other status on the epidemic means more antibiotic use. And you can see that these impact last up to 45 weeks post outbreak, because this is a metric across all the groups, okay? And then you can see that all of the groups, they were statistically significant. When we look for the nursery and then just for the water treatment, we also saw an increase on the percentage of lots that were treated with water by almost four times more compared to the naive. So pretty much, if you have an outbreak or if you have an epidemic or endemic phase, endemic situation for PERS, you will be having more use of antibiotics. And this is the last slide here for the finishing phase, that we did not have an increase on the overall, but when we look at for all the injectables as well, we did have an increase on antibiotic use on injectables by 2.74 times. So when you had PERS, you may open the doors for other diseases, and then you will have to use more antibiotics than you would need if you didn't have that disease. My take-home message here will be that disease is just not like a map. So the true opportunity cost of the disease exceeds any single pathogen. And then usually related to control, I always say that control all pathogens you can, and control all pathogens and eliminate the ones you can. Regarding biosecurity, is the most effective intervention. We did not get too much on the biosecurity, but I have my students working on different projects that I'm happy to share on biosecurity related to the cell farm, but also the grow finish phase and then associations with disease outbreaks. PERS is the gateway, so always need to stabilize for PERS because the infection of co-infections will be lower. And last, disease means fewer antibiotics, right? The case study shows that when we have PERS, we're more likely to be using more antibiotics than we should. So with that, I would like to thank for the opportunity. I would thank the farm, and also I would thank PIC for the work that we did together. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Silva. I like the comparison to the iceberg. I think it's a great way to think about the value of preventative technologies and biosecurity. So I do want to thank both of our presenters today. Before we wrap things up, though, we are going to move into a quick question and answer portion. So as a reminder to everyone, if you haven't submitted your question yet, use the Q&A function at the bottom of your screen. I see there are a couple of questions that have come in. So we're going to take a few minutes to run through as many as we can. So the first question comes for Dr. Farzand. And it's, could you please elaborate on ETEC detection and isolation and the infectious dose of ETEC for pigs?
Sure. I think so could you repeat the question? I think I lost you, the last part of your question. Perhaps.
Yeah. So the question was
a technicality issue with my computer today. Yes, please.
So the question was, can you please elaborate on ETEC detection and isolation and the infectious dose of ETEC for pigs?
Yes, so the detection is basically is culturing, very, very, very basic things to do the culture for E. coli, and then on the selective media like McConkie and blood agar, and so then pick up the colonies that presumably they are E. coli. Then we do the multiplex PCR for to determine the presence of the genes for either Fimberia, like I said, F4, F18, etc., and also the toxin. So there are three different multiplex PCR that end of the day we will see the pattern of the virulence factors for each E. coli, and then we see if it's enterotoxic or not. The second part of the question is that again, could you say what was the second part of the question? Sorry, Daniel. Dosage, sorry, the dosage. Yeah.
The infectious dose of
The
ETEC for
infectious
pigs.
dosage is, I think, for ETEC is, it is hard to say, but not, I mean, it cannot say based on the challenge study that we are doing for E. coli infection. We can actually induce the disease by something about 10 to 8, 10 to 9, CFU per meal to induce the clinical signs of the post-weaning diarrhea. I guess on farm and commercial farms in a real life, the situation is different, pig to pig, and in environment and all of the immunity and things like that, it's important. But like I said, under the challenge control study, I think 10 to 9 CFU per ml or 10 to 8 is it sort of infectious dosage for enterotoxic E. coli. Again, depends on if F4 and if 18, it's maybe a little different on that. So that's something that based on the our challenge trials that we are doing.
Okay, thanks. So another question for Dr. Farzan. You showed us the use of, or you mentioned the use of zinc oxide, which in the future won't be used anymore. Can vaccines be used as an alternative?
Absolutely. I think like I mentioned, I mean that's the goal is to if we have the effective vaccine, if we have the vaccine that they are exactly targeting the ETEC or enterotoxic E. coli that involve in post-weaning diarrhea, most likely the vaccine can actually do the job and prevent the pigs. Even as I mentioned, zinc oxide, I will go back and I think even yes, I think in Europe already and in the state in Canada, soon it's actually banned. But I think that's the thing. I mean, even using the zinc oxide in this study specifically, it shows that it's not actually fully protective against post-weaning diarrhea. But I think yes, the answer is that if the effective vaccine, if a proper vaccine is used, it can be certainly the best way to perhaps the best way to prevent the pigs to get the develop the post-weaning diarrhea.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So the next question is for Dr. Silva. And the question is, where do you see the biggest opportunities for improving antimicrobial stewardship through prevention? And what are your views on the use of gene editing in line with that question?
That's a very good question. I believe I always like to think that removing the disease or preventing the disease to occur is the first step to reduce antibiotic use. And then if you think about swine production, unfortunately, right, PRRS is the major driver of co-infections in the field. So if we are able to reduce PRRS or any other diseases, right, such as Mycoplasma, PED, and any other ones, it's more likely that we will reduce the antibiotic use. So if that comes to the point that the gene editing technology is acceptable and people, consumers are comfortable, as I am, as a consumer, I believe it's a very interesting tool that we have in our hands because it has been used in any other in multiple production animals and also crop areas. So
All right, thank you. Now I'm just keeping an eye on the time, and I do see we have reached the end of the hour. I do apologize if we weren't able to get to everyone's questions. What we can do is share the questions that we weren't able to get through with our panelists, and we'll invite them to get back to the people who submitted. Now, before we conclude, again, I do want to thank everyone who joined us today. We certainly appreciate everyone's participation and the great discussions that we were having. So I do want to also extend a sincere thanks to our presenters, Dr. Vahab Farzan and Dr. Gustavo Silva, for sharing their expertise and the great research that they've been doing with us. So, of course, today's discussion, it did highlight how important it is to keep building on our understanding of disease risk, to keep investing in prevention and continuing to support research that helps producers improve herd health and reducing reliance on antimicrobials. So, on behalf of Swine Innovation Pork, I do want to thank everyone for being a part of today's conversation. And for your continued interest in research and innovation, because that's what supports the long-term success of Canada's pork sector. And as we heard from the presentations today, the knowledge and the insights can keep helping us in terms of fine-tuning and developing more targeted responses that'll strengthen our success. So with that, again, I'll thank both our presenters, and we'll conclude today's webinar. So thanks again, everyone, and have a great day.